Shabbat Shalom. I hope everyone's enjoying either some vacation time or some downtime at the office. And tomorrow night, the secular winter holiday season concludes with New Year's Eve. And people often ask, is it okay to celebrate New Year's Eve? Rabbi, what do you think? And what I'd like to tell you is there is nothing particularly Jewish about celebrating New Year's, but that's not to suggest that there's something wrong with celebrating New Year's. I would like to state, however, that there is something incredibly Jewish about making New Year's resolutions. Resolutions are similar to blessings. Like blessings, resolutions are an opportunity to pause in the present by taking stock in your past in order to build your future. A New Year's resolution is an opportunity to look at where you are and strive to become who you hope to be. Resolutions, like blessings, are opportunities to deepen our lives. Emerson wrote that we ask for a long life, but what we really want is a life full of meaning. Resolutions or blessings help us achieve meaning. They help us elevate the mundane. In a way, resolutions, like blessings, take what's ordinary and make it holy. And that's why this New Year's Eve, I'm going to make some personal New Year's resolutions. And I hope that these resolutions will allow me to see something that I should do, not as a task, but rather as a holy pursuit. And this morning, I'd like to ask us to do the same as a community. I'd like to ask us as a community to consider where we are and where we hope to be. This morning, I'd like to offer you three New Year's resolutions for this community. Resolutions for the continuity of community. To begin to unpack the first resolution, I want us to take a look at the Talmud. And there's that famous case in the Talmud. A potential convert approaches Hillel and Shammai. The man asks what seems to be a ludicrous question. The man wants to learn the entire Torah while standing on one foot. Now Shammai, he's known to be somewhat moody. He reacts poorly to the request. Poorly is an understatement. Shammai hits the man with a stick until the man leaves. But Hillel accepts the man. And it's interesting that it's Shammai, the same dour, somewhat moody man, the man with the stick, who also requires that we greet everyone with panim yafot, that we greet everyone with a smile. So in one place, he's hitting a potential convert with a stick, and in another place, he's requiring that we welcome everyone with panim yafot, with a smile. It seems a bit strange. Rabbi Joseph Talushkin recently shared with us his understanding of this seemingly incongruous teaching. You see, for Hillel, greeting people warmly came naturally. And therefore, there was no reason for him to require that we greet people warmly. And Shammai, he also thought that being friendly is very important, yet he had a harder time being friendly, so he requires all people to be friendly. Let's learn from Shammai. We can demand civility. Where are all the places where civility would make the biggest difference? Let's think. The supermarket checkout line, the 405 during rush hour, and a television screen at the height of political campaigns. At these times, we expect something nasty. We expect that someone's going to yell at the supermarket clerk. We expect that there's going to be someone who gets cut off and there's going to be road rage on the 405. And we expect nasty and belligerent campaign attack ads. We expect the worst, but we can demand better. Civility pays off. There was a recent article in the New York Times, and this article said that in service fields, customer service representatives used to reward those who yelled the loudest. If you complained enough and you complained bitterly, you were more likely to get what you wanted. Now these same service representatives are taught to reward civility and decency. We should require civility. And in our synagogues, in the Jewish community, we need to reach beyond civility. At a place in which we hope to encounter God, we can first greet and welcome one another. If a synagogue is to be a place of comfort, prayer, and community, it should also be welcoming and warm. It's not easy to put yourself out there with strangers, but it pays off. When I call new members to the synagogue and I ask them what made them feel best about joining Sinai Temple, they often reply because they were greeted warmly, because someone took the time to introduce themselves, to say hello, to find out a little bit about that person. Greeting people warmly, it pays off. And like Shammai suggests, it just starts with a smile. Panim Yafot. This new year, let's resolve to learn from Shammai. Let's resolve to demand civility in the streets, demand civility in the streets, and demand smiles in the synagogues. This year, may we all be blessed with Panim Yafot, smiling faces that help us build warm communities. To introduce the second resolution, I want to revisit the work of Emil Fackenheim, a late Jewish philosopher. Now, when faced with how to respond to the Holocaust, when, of course, no writing, no philosophical work, nothing can understand such evil, Fackenheim responds by adding a mitzvah to our tradition. Fackenheim teaches that in the post-Holocaust era, for Jews, there's a new commandment, the 614th commandment, and that is, do not grant Hitler a posthumous victory. The 614th commandment demands that we remember. It dictates that we remember the ghastly terror of the Nazi regime, the 6 million who perished, and the brave few who survived. We must not forget. When I was a small boy, my family went to lunch at Norma and Manny's. They were family friends. And when lunch was over, I cleared the table as Norma started washing the dishes. And as I brought over a stack of plates, she turned the faucet on, and she rolled up her sleeves. "What's that?" I innocently asked, pointing to the numbers on her arm. Then Norma, someone who had seen and experienced the unimaginable, introduced me to the Holocaust. I will never forget. We must all remember. But in order to fulfill the 614th commandment, in order not to grant Hitler a posthumous victory, we must recognize that remembering is an action verb. It's not enough to remember in our heads, our hearts, or our souls. We remember through our actions. Remembering is building Jewish schools like Sinai Akiba Academy. It's celebrating Shabbat. It's studying Jewish texts. It's enjoying Jewish culture. Remembering is living Jewishly. Remembering is taking action. It's supporting Israel. It's ensuring that Israel remains free and strong in a Jewish homeland. It is remembering is assuring that the words of the HaTikvah remain a reality and are not reduced to a dream. Liot am chovshi be'artzenu, to be a free nation in our land, Eretz Sion Yerushalayim, the land of Zion and Jerusalem. And remembering reaches beyond the Middle East. It reaches beyond our concern for Israel. Our memories, they encourage us to remember wherever, any place in the world where there is oppression and tyranny. For the Jewish people, for all of us, remembering is serving as a light unto the nations. And today, we are called to remember. Today, our memory of the Nazi tyranny calls us to Darfur. By helping to build a future in Darfur, we remember the horrors of our past. In Darfur, we have the opportunity to remember the 6 million by saving millions of lives that are in peril. Today, remembering means saving Darfur. Let us all remember the Holocaust. Our second resolution, we will remember by taking action. This new year, may we remember through our actions, bringing blessing to us, our people, and to the memories of all those who perished. For the third and final resolution, I want to refer to the work of the Tosafot, a medieval commentary on the Talmud. At one point, the Tosafot asks why the Kaddish, is written in Aramaic, not Hebrew. And a few possibilities are discussed, but ultimately, the Tosafot concludes that the Kaddish is written in Aramaic because at the time that it was written, fewer and fewer people were able to understand Hebrew. Since Aramaic was the most common language, and the rabbis wanted everyone to benefit from this prayer, the Kaddish was written in Aramaic and thereby made accessible to the entire Jewish community. The writing of the Kaddish in Aramaic reminds us that we need to ensure that the larger Jewish community finds Judaism accessible and meaningful. What more can we do to make Judaism speak to the larger community? How can we reach the unaffiliated, the many, too many Jews on the periphery of the Jewish world? By writing a prayer in Aramaic and not Hebrew, the rabbis reached out to the community. Similarly, how can we reach out to the larger Jewish world today? How can we assure that Judaism retains relevancy for Jews living in the 21st century? A few years ago, I was in Prague for Pesach. And the first night, Jewish travelers from all over the world collected in the synagogue before the community Seder. As everyone was anxious to begin the Seder, the service went very quickly. There were no page numbers, there were no explanations, it was just davening. And a man in front of me was visibly frustrated. I tried to help him through the service, but he continued to have difficulty. He finally leaned over to me and said, "You know, it is Passover, one of the holiest Jewish holidays. Here I am in synagogue, but sadly, I would feel more comfortable in a church. Our synagogues are sacred. Our texts, they teach timeless truths. Our people live rich lives filled with ancient traditions. Judaism is indeed holy. And at a time where so many people live confused lives, searching any way to find significance and contentment, Judaism offers an answer. Yet for so many, like this man in the synagogue in Prague, it's difficult to approach Judaism. And we can make it easier. We can think creatively in order to speak to those not yet invested in Judaism. Following the spirit of those who wrote the Kaddish in Aramaic, allowing it to be enjoyed by everyone, we can be blessed with the creativity to similarly share the gift of Judaism. I recently received a letter from someone who came to a Shabbat dinner. You see, once a month, our young professional group, Atid, hosts Shabbat dinners. And the Shabbat dinners are friendly, the service is a bit alternative. And this young woman wrote to me and said that she has been all over the world searching for God and meaning. And thanks to Atid, thanks to this Shabbat dinner, she realized that true holiness was home, was in Judaism. For our third resolution, let's be creative and open to how we introduce Judaism. For this new year, may we be blessed to know how to effectively translate our ancient traditions into contemporary meaning in order to excite the minds, touch the hearts, and elevate the souls of all our people. May our resolutions for the year, our resolution to bring civility to the streets and panim yafot, smiles to the synagogues, our resolution to remember through our actions, and our resolution to creatively share Judaism with the entire community, may these serve as a spiritual foundation for the upcoming year. May all these resolutions help us add depth and meaning and purpose to 2007. May our resolutions for today serve a holy purpose, bringing meaning and purpose to the lives we live and the people we strive to be. May these community resolutions, along with all of our personal resolutions, bring us closer to the people we are capable of being. May they bring us closer to one another, and may they bring us closer to God. And let us all say, Amen.